Welcome to the Run for God Run Club, where you will find God in a runner's space.
Welcome to the Run for God Run Club. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail, where you can in turn inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. Well, I am your running host, Dean Thompson, and we are coming from an odd place this time. I am in New Jersey. Mitchell is in Dalton, but we'll talk about that in a minute. Have you ever considered that your body is on loan from God? Would you treat it differently if you did? We're going to talk about that story today, and I'm going to explain what we can learn from the high jump that we can apply to our running. And joining me again for those stories and much more is Run for God founder Mitchell Hollis.
Thanks for having me, Dean. How's you
coming from New Jersey? Well, I'm up here. My father is in the hospital, and so we're visiting him. He's doing better, so hopefully he improves as we're here. So how are things in Dalton? Is it still hot there? Because it's cool up here.
No, it's actually really nice this morning. It's I think overnight it was in the high 50s, low 60s, and it's not supposed to be out of the 70s today. So it's low humidity. It's nice. It's a great day to be outside walking and running here, for sure.
So it's the same there as it is here.
Yeah. Now, what part of explain New Jersey to me, because I really don't know the lay of the land up there. That's just outside of New York City, right?
Yeah, we are literally 30 minutes from New York City where we are. So, we're just across the river from, we're in a place called Avenel, New Jersey. We're close to Woodbridge, New Jersey. If you're from New Jersey or know about New Jersey, you may know Woodbridge. That's where we're at. So if you're one of those who watches the podcast normally, we apologize. This may not be the best, quality for watching this time, but we'll be back at it next week, and hopefully the audio quality will be fine to listen to. So
yeah.
Anyway, so all good. Let me talk about our post from the week. John Campbell posted a neat post. He said, I did 4.5 miles this morning with a running friend, but the heat and humidity was a bit much. I had to keep my pace down in order to engage in conversation. I was soaked in sweat, but this afternoon the heat index climbed to 112. I was running with someone who is much faster than I, who obviously had to slow way down. Question, do any of you ever feel embarrassed or self-conscious when you run with someone much faster than yourself? My friend would never intentionally make me feel bad about it, but in order to run and hold a conversation, my average pace was 13:25. Yet I praise God for some of the progress. It's great to say, it's a way to keep things in perspective, right? This the idea that he's thankful for what he can do.
Yeah.
But this is a really good question, because we see this all the time. Well, you and I do this, right?
Yeah, I think it really comes down to, and John kind of said it here, but you know, we often think that the person we're running with, me running with you, I'm the slower one, obviously. And we often think, well, that person's going to think less of me or something like that, you know, if I say we need to slow down. But I say, speak up and say what you're feeling, because the person, people are never thinking what you think they're thinking. And so with you, a lot of times I'll just say, hey, we need to slow down, or you can go on. But you never have a problem with slowing down. And so we build these narratives up in our head. We prescribe things that people aren't actually thinking. And that's just kind of the nature of who we are. But yeah, I don't see anything wrong if you're running with somebody, kind of setting the expectation up front. And then if you don't, even during the run, going ahead and making the comment, you know, we need to slow down just a little bit. And 9.9 times out of 10, the person is not going to have a problem.
The truth is,
you probably shouldn't be running with them.
Yeah. Well, that's true. The truth is that I'm not going to run with you unless I plan to run a little bit slower than I normally run. Right. That's just, so you have to realize that person agreed to run with a person who is slower than them. And so that's what they're ready for. That's what they're there for, right? Every other week, I meet up with Darren Lewis. You know, Darren's a little bit slower than I am, but we meet every other week. And, you know, he's always saying, we may have to go a little slower today. I'm like, whatever we need to do is fine. It's about the company and just getting in a little bit of a run. So don't feel guilty. Don't ever feel guilty.
Yeah. But on the flip side of that, Dean, and we've talked about this before, sometimes you got to be careful that it doesn't go the other way. You know, sometimes if you're running with a person who may be the same speed as you, you get in this cycle of each of you are thinking that you're slowing the other one down. And before you know it, you're ripping each other's legs out from under them because you're speeding up too fast. Short. Because you think he's thinking I'm going too slow and he's thinking you're thinking he's going too slow. And it's a cycle that can – I've done that on the bike, you know, with a guy I used to train with. We both thought we were slowing each other down. And when we got done with our ride, we're like, you tried to kill me. And he said, no, you were trying to kill me. So – It's better to talk about these things before the workout starts and kind of set expectations before you even start.
Yep, for sure. Good advice. Well, our trivia question from last week was this. There was an athlete who won 12 medals in track and field in the Olympics. His nickname was the Flying Finn. What was his real name? Well, I learned something when I started researching this. There is not just one athlete called the Flying Finn. I never knew that before. But the one that I'm talking about, of course, is Paavo Nurmi, because he won the 12 medals in track and field, so that's easy. But what I found out was that there are other athletes called the Flying Finn or other sports, race car drivers called the Flying Finn. There was also an airline called the Flying Finn. So I thought all that was interesting. Hans, the original Flying Finn was a guy named Hans Kolomainen. I can't remember how you say it. Kolomainen, I think it is. Middle distance runner. And in 1912, he won 3 medals in the Olympics. He was probably maybe the first Finnish athlete that was really, really good. And so anyway, but the Flying Finn, as far as I'm concerned, is Paavo Nurmi. The guy he set 22 world records in distances that ranged from 1500 meters to 20,000 meters. So that's really quite a range. At one point, he was defeated in every distance from 800 meters up. For 121 races, he didn't lose. That's just incredible. And he, over his lifetime, he was never beaten in cross country or the 10,000 meters. How's that for impressive? And this is maybe the most impressive thing he ever did. He set the world records in the 1500 meters and the 5000 meters an hour apart from each other.
Wow.
Can you imagine that's unbelievable.
Was this like in college or was this in professional?
I want to say this was in the Olympics when he did this in the 1932 Olympics.
Wow.
No, in the 1928 Olympics, I think it was. Yeah. But he tried to finish his career. He wanted to finish his career in kind of a special way. He wasn't really a marathoner, but he wanted to finish his career by trying to win the Olympic marathon. And in 1932, he wanted to enter the Olympic marathon, but they denied his entry. There was a lot of politics going on. Of course, you know, Germany was in charge of the 1932 Olympics. And there's some talk that maybe behind the scenes they orchestrated all this ahead of time. But bottom line is there were rumors that he had collected money for an appearance fee for a couple of track meets in Germany. And that made him a professional. And in the Olympics at that time, you weren't able to run in the Olympics if you were a professional. And so they denied him entry and wouldn't let him run in the Olympics. That was a sad way to end one of the greatest running careers of all time. But eventually, Paavo became one of the richest people in Finland, which is kind of interesting. You know, the guy was really good at creating systems. As a matter of fact, his training methods were kind of cutting edge. They say you never caught him running without a stopwatch because he was always trying to work on getting faster. And that's really interesting to me because I feel like Paavo Nurmi was one of the first guys to really approach training in a scientific way. And of course today that's really, really important to what we do. Mm-hmm. So Paavo Nurmi was a great runner. Wow. Had you heard of him?
I've never heard of him. Of course, that's not surprising.
Yeah.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
So we're back, and Dean, I was listening to a podcast this past week. We went on a little vacation, and I had some time, you know, some good long walks, and I was listening to a podcast, and I heard a statement that really just it was a profound statement to me because I've never heard it put this way. You know, you hear we've always talked about faith and fear cannot coexist, and we've kind of talked that one before. But I heard this statement and it really challenged me because I think we all struggle with this. But the statement was judgment and joy cannot coexist. And the idea is that, you know, a lot of times we find ourselves judging others around us. And what the person was saying is that only steals our joy. It does nothing to the person that we're judging, but it only steals our joy. And I don't know, I've never heard it put that way, and that really just stood out to me, the fact that judgment and joy cannot coexist. And if you really think about it, it's so true.
Yeah, yeah, I've never heard that either, but that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I like it. Well, I don't know if you realize this, but if when this podcast comes out, next week is the first official day of summer.
Yeah.
So got any summer plans this year?
No, we're going to kind of keep it low key. I think Holly and I are going to get away, around our anniversary in August. But other than that, we're kind of sticking close to home this year.
Yeah.
How about you?
I'll tell you what I'm going to try to do. I think, you know, they have the Market Street Mile.
Yeah.
Every June. In Chattanooga.
Yeah.
And so I've talked about this before, but you know, the furthest apart I can see that anybody has broken 5 minutes for a mile is 43 and a half years.
Yeah.
Well, right now it's been 44 years since the first time I broke 5 minutes for the mile. So my goal is to try to run a sub 5 minute mile at the Market Street Mile in a month, to see if I can go longer than that 43 and a half years. So. That'll be exciting and fun to do. That'll be a cool goal to try to reach.
Of course, you don't do much speed work anyway, but have you done many workouts to kind of help that since you've been doing the
I haven't. I thought I might do one or two.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought I might do just one or two, you know, just something, you know, maybe like 4 times or 8 times 400 just to kind of get the legs used to running a little faster.
Yeah.
Between now and then. So, a matter of fact, I may look for a track while I'm here in New Jersey. My father, the hospital that he's in is near Rutgers University. So I think I'm going to see if I can find the track over there, maybe. if they'll let me on it. I don't know.
Yeah. Is that the
we'll
same
see. But anyway, thing that should be fun.
The Magnum Mile. Is that the Magnum Mile you're talking about? Oh, no, that's the Market Street Mile.
No, that's different. Yep. The Market Street Mile is actually on the roads. The Magnum Mile is on the track.
Right.
So, but in order to make the Magnum Mile, you have to run the 5K in the morning. And I, you know, I did that last year, or was it last year or the year before? Maybe the year before last. And, man, I was shot after running the 5K. Yeah. I was shot.
Now, last year was the year that they had the guy, that pro guy there, who he was coming to break four, and he did break four. But the cool thing was, Lane sent me videos. All the power went out, and a storm was moving in, and everybody that was there to watch it turned on their cell phones, and they lit up the track with their cell phones. And the guy wound up breaking it, but it was just a really cool build-up to it and the atmosphere that you really can't replicate again. But it was really neat to see how that played out last year.
Hey, I remember that. That was cool. I wish I had been there. I think we were out of town at the time, matter of fact. Yeah. Well, this story, I like this story. You know, I talk about reframes all the time, and this story contains a pretty good reframe, really good reframe. And so let's see if, as I read this, if you can find the reframe in this. It is called, Does Your Vessel Need a Tune-Up? In 2020, my husband suffered a spinal cord injury. Did I say who this was from? This is from Kim Buford. Did I say that?
No.
I think I missed it. Kimberly Buford wrote this story. So that's important to the story. So does your vessel need a tune-up? In 2020, my husband suffered a spinal cord injury. He was suddenly confined to a wheelchair, at least for a while. After surgery, he was in an inpatient rehab from October until December. I stayed by his side every day and night, watching him relearn how to navigate his life towards a full recovery. When we came home, my excitement quickly turned to anxiety. Would I really be able to be the caregiver he needed and maintain my full-time job as a school administrator? Would I be able to help him transfer and do all the daily caregiving responsibilities required without having a full team of doctors, nurses, and therapists a call button away? I've always loved the outdoors, and that's been my place to find calmness and peace, but I've never been physically active. I was 300 pounds and on several medications. I was not physically healthy, but I had this wild idea to go outside and run for a mile and try to relieve this anxiety. Run? Why did this even cross my mind? I've never ran, not even in middle school PE class. My daughter sent me a pair of tennis shoes, and on December 17th, I set out on the first run of my life. However, let me tell you about what happened on that mile. I cried. I prayed. I talked to God. I told him that I needed him to help me be the wife that my husband needed me to be. I asked God why running was something that I felt I needed to do. I did a lot of talking, but thankfully that mile took me almost 19 minutes. Finally, I stopped talking and started listening. At first, I thought my mind was wandering as I started reminiscing about what my dad taught me about borrowing things from other people. He taught me that when I borrowed someone's car, I should always return it better than I received it. Fill up the gas, check the air in the tires, and wash it before returning it. As I was reminiscing, I was thinking, now why on earth would this be what I'm thinking about when I'm trying to get answers from God? Then God spoke. He said, your body is a temple and a vessel that I've provided for you to do my work. You have not taken care of this vessel that I've loaned you, and if you return it to me today, you would not be returning it to me in good condition. The work that you have ahead of you will require you to be healthy. You will learn more about me and my plan for you through running. After a few moments, I replied, I said, God, I want to do your will, but I need help. I don't know how to run. I don't know how to get healthy. But you said if I lack wisdom, that I can ask you for it. So I am. He has done just that. I came off of almost all meds. I lost over 100 pounds and completed my first marathon in January of 2023. He has given me guidance, strength, and wisdom. and I'm excited for his complete healing to see where this journey takes us. We take every opportunity to thank God for everything, as nothing is taken for granted anymore. Running is now my time with God, opportunities to see the lilies and his creation as he calms my spirit and relieves my anxiety with every step on the pavement.
Wow. That's an incredible story. Yeah,
isn't it great? For some reason, it reminded me of Beth Roberts. I don't know if you remember Beth Roberts' story, but you know, when Beth said, you know, I just felt this, I felt compelled to go out and try to run, and she didn't really understand why. And then later, you know, she had a different issue. She had a depression issue that she was trying to work on, and it helped her with that issue. So yeah, it's very similar in some ways.
You know, we talk so much about, you know, the mental health crisis in our country today. And yes, there is one. And yes, some people need, professional help and medications, but you and I have talked about, I mean, just like with her in this story, with Beth and her story, getting out and getting in God's creation, turning off all the inputs, unplugging the, laying the cell phones down, unplugging the earbuds, and just listening while you get out there and walk or run. I'm just convinced, Dean, if everybody that had mental health problems would give that a try, I would think a large percentage of those issues would go away just by simply doing what she did in this story.
I totally agree. I totally agree. And just to back you up what you said a few minutes ago, we're not saying that running can clear all mental health issues.
No.
But we are saying that running can help some mental health issues if you'll give it a try.
Well, but you said the right word, clear our minds. I believe that most mental health, not most, I shouldn't set a number here. I believe that many mental health issues are a result of just not having a clear mind. We fill our schedules so much. We bombard our minds with so many inputs, so many social media ads and TV and computer screens that we can't, the old phrase, you can't see the forest for the trees, rings true here. And when you get out and you unplug everything and you get out there and you just talk to God, it truly is a way to clear your mind. Now, there may still be issues after that, but that is a huge step in the right direction. It's just to get out and find a way to clear your mind.
Well, those issues are much easier to deal with when you have a clear mind.
Sure.
Right? I mean, just clearing your mind gives you the opportunity to, okay, because how many times we've all done this, right, where we've had some kind of a problem or an issue and we're trying to figure it out. We're trying to solve the issue and we're so frustrated and we're digging into it and digging into it. We can't figure it out. And then we leave it and we come back to it. And as soon as we come back, we're like, ah, and you get the answer right away because all of a sudden your mind is relaxed and you're able to think more clearly. And that's kind of what running can do.
I have to think you're talking about your lawnmower right there.
That's
sorry,
one
I had to
things.
Throw that jab in there.
But look in this case where Kimberly, look what God did good heavens. She had no idea why God's asking her to do something. She's 300 pounds. She goes from 300 pounds to marathoner just by saying, okay, God, this doesn't make any sense to me, but I'm just going to do what you're asking me to do. Isn't that just incredible that, I mean, the way God works and can transform us, just, you know, these things don't happen overnight usually, but in this case with Kimberly, it just about did happen overnight.
Yeah.
That's the other thing that's amazing about this story to me.
God asked her to do something that there's no way she could take the credit for. This made absolutely no sense in any way. And that's how many times you know when God's talking, when it's coming at a weird time. You know, for her, there was so much going on in her life. It obviously doesn't sound like anything you would ever say. I'm sure nobody around Kimberly ever heard her say, I think I'm going to go run. And That those are the moments where God is really about to do something incredible, when it doesn't make sense for you to be thinking what you're thinking. A lot of times that is God talking.
Yeah. And what a great concept this is too, right? Our bodies are on loan to us. I mean, what a great, that's a great reframe, right? And the idea of returning our bodies back to God and what's it going to look like when you give it back to him? Cause I know how you are. You borrow stuff from me and you return it in way better shape than you got it from me. Cause that's just the way you are. And I'm the same way.
Well, that's the way we were raised, but that is also how God commands us. I mean, our body is a temple of the Holy Spirit. It's not ours. Our money is not ours. Everything we're just stewarding everything we have for God, and we need to return it better than how we got it. Now, in the case of our body and God, it's not going to happen, but that needs to be our goal, is to return it better than we got it.
Yeah. Matthew 6:34 says, "Do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about its own things. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble." She goes on to say, "I'm a planner and a bit of a control freak. Running has taught me how to plan, but allow for adjustments and modifications when needed. This has also helped me in navigating this role of caregiving, because the planning phase is often in vain when he's in." I like the way she puts that.
I'm right there with her on that.
Yeah. Well, and you know, and the truth is, the best plans in the world don't mean anything when you get a curveball, right? Right. But we should always be ready to adjust the plan, but we should also always be planning. You know, I've told the story in here before about, and it's tongue in cheek, but how I got started not planning things when I had a speech class when I was in college. And I was supposed to give a speech on a Wednesday, and on Monday, the professor calls me to go to the front of the room. Well, I hadn't planned yet. All I had planned was what my topic was. Ironically, right now, it was about running shoes at the time. I was working in a running shoe store, and I knew what my topic was, but that's all I knew. And so, they called my name, and I had two choices. I could say, "I'm not ready," or I could go do it. And I went and did it, and I got an A on that speech. And I tell people ever since then, I don't plan anything, but that's a bad idea.
That is a
terrible idea and not a good way to live life. So it's okay to overplan. You know, we do this podcast. I put a lot of planning into this podcast, right? We have a lot of stuff. Well, there's a lot of stuff we just throw out that we never use.
Right.
I would much rather do that than to not have the stuff we need to do, right? Be prepared.
Yeah, I think there's a balance there. I think I'm on one end of the spectrum. You're on the other end of the spectrum, and we could both find a yep. happy median in there. I mean, I'm the guy that I plan spontaneity. You know, that's I'll probably take it to the wrong extreme. But I feel like I try to always be prepared, but to Kimberly's point, you know, life throws you curveballs sometimes, and spontaneity is a must sometimes.
And you're pretty good at that too. And in spontaneity, there's a lot of fun in just doing something that just pops up in front of you sometimes, right? And that's the thing you have. That's the area where I see some people who are big planners. I think that's the area where they get hurt, is they don't want to deviate from the plan. And sometimes God has got something right in front of you that he wants you to deviate from the plan.
Yeah. Well, some of my family
was making fun of me. But you're pretty good about that.
Some of my family was making fun of me this past week, because we went on a cruise on vacation. And on the cruise boat, you can do like timed dinners. So you can set a time like 5:30 or 7:30 of when you and your party are going to dinner. Or you can have what's called my time, which means – you just go whenever. And I mean, it just really bugged me. I'm like, how does that even make any sense? How do people just, you know, I chose the, we're going to dinner at 5:30 every evening, because you can plan your day around that. But you would have chose the my time. I know you would have chose the my time.
Yep. Absolutely. Second Timothy 2:21. Therefore, if anyone cleanses himself from the latter, he will be a vessel for honor, sanctified and useful for the master, prepared for every good work. She says, unlearning how to be a people pleaser is not the easiest thing for my natural mind. However, when I look at my life as a vessel for honor, I have no problem not trying to please people because my goal is to please God. Sometimes that means saying no because I have to take care of myself or my husband first. After running my first marathon, I immediately wanted to run another one. But after realizing how much time that takes away from me caring for my husband, I decided that I may never run another marathon, and I'm perfectly okay with that. At this moment, that is not the purpose of this vessel. It may be again in the future, but not at this time.
Here again,
that's good flexibility right there, right?
You've got extremes. I'm, Holly is right there where she is. You know, my wife, she is a people pleaser. She's got a heart of gold and wants everybody to be happy. And I'm on the other end of the spectrum. I'm like, no is a complete sentence in my world. And, but there's a happy median even there. You can't fall on either end of the spectrum. There's got to be some compromise here.
Yeah. Yeah. I think no matter what we're doing and no matter how much we have planned and no matter who we are and how we are, we always have to open to a change in direction. That's where Kimberly was here. She's a people pleaser. She's a planner. And all of a sudden God's telling her, hey, you need to start running. And she's like, what? That's talk about being open to change. I mean, that's almost like God telling me, you know what I want you to do next week? I want you to start singing in front of the church. I would be mortified to try to do that. Right. But when I think about what Kimberly did, that's how uncomfortable what she did was. I mean, that's really impressive. I'm so impressed and in awe of what she did. It's incredible. And the other thing too is though, when we do make changes, when we find that we have to change, people like change just for change's sake. Like they just like to change, like just something, just I want something different. But that's not always the right thing either, right?
Sure.
It's okay to eat the same thing 2 days in a row. I tell people that all the time. I'll eat the same thing for lunch for an entire week. It doesn't bother me at all. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying everybody should do that, but it's okay to do things in a standard way, I guess, is what I'm saying. So, sure. Just got to make sure that when we do change direction and what Kimberly did here was she was listening for God's direction. Mm-hmm. And if we'll listen for his direction, we're not going to go wrong. 1 Corinthians 6:19-20. Do you not know that your bodies are temples of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have received from God? You are not your own. You are bought at a price. Therefore, honor God with your bodies. And she says, as soon as my heart received this message, I made my choices about eating and exercising non-negotiable. Not that I always make the right choice, but I'm always doing my best to honor God with my body through nutrition and running by going to him first for guidance. Talk about a game-changing mindset. I thought about it from this standpoint. What if we thought that God, we were going to keep a food log, right? And God was going to check our food log every day. What if that was the case? How would we change? I would think we would change a lot, right? If we thought that, and really and truly, God keeps track of all that, right? Sure. So he is checking our food log. And that's kind of what she's saying. And, now I think God wants us to enjoy ourselves. I think it's okay for us to have ice cream once a month. I think he wants us to enjoy things. But he also wants us to make smart choices most of the time. He doesn't want us having ice cream every night, right?
Yeah. I think I've told the story, years ago. I was going through some certifications for triathlon coaching, and, the guy I was sitting under, he was, talking about his training methods with athletes, and somebody raised their hand. They asked about, how does he handle nutrition with athletes? And he said, I really don't get into nutrition. He says it's, nutrition is really pretty simple. We complicate nutrition many times. And the guy kind of pushed back on me. He said, so what do? You know, you coach some high-level triathletes and people who are really trying to change their lives. He said, I do a simple thing on nutrition. All of my athletes, every time they sit down for a meal, they have to take a picture of it and send it to me. He said, that's all I do. Because when people think that they're having to be accountable and show somebody what they're doing, it changes the way they think. And that really stuck with me through the years that, you know, it's we complicate things too many times. But if we think somebody is going to see everything that we're doing, then we'll change our behavior. But the thing is, God does see everything that we're doing. But yet we don't put it in that same frame of mind, like taking a picture of your food and sending it to a coach. But if we thought that way, it would be a game changer in how we run really every aspect of our life.
That is so true. Yep. That's a great example. And you know, I mean, if you're out there and you're listening to this and I mean, and you've got some, you know, maybe you want to lose some weight. That's a great way to do it is find a partner that you can do that back and forth with. That could be a big game changer.
But the problem with most people, the problem with me, the problem I would say sometimes with you, really all of us as a society, is we say we want to do things with our mouth, but we don't want to be held accountable. And
yeah,
that is the hardest thing to do because that means you got to put yourself out there, right? You know, to be accountable, you have to be willing to show your failure from time to time. And that is the hardest thing to get over. And that's why, like in the 5K challenge, we build this community. We're really with Run Club. We build this community where we can hold each other accountable in a loving way, but holding each other accountable nonetheless. That's the secret, is the accountability in the community, really in anything you're doing.
That's true. Yeah, and like I said, that's a great way to do it. The whole taking a picture of your food. I mean, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, think about what if you had to send your pastor a picture of every TV show you're about to watch? Would it change the shows that you watch on TV?
Yeah.
It would for me.
Well, that's yeah. It's true. Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. Yeah. But, and like I said, you could find somebody out there who, you know, you can hold yourself accountable with. Mm-hmm. Right. Are you trusting in God to take care of the things you are worrying about? Man, that's a mouthful. She goes, hey, I've heard it stated that fear and faith cannot reside in the same space. Through this experience of healing, both physically and spiritually, sometimes I have to just read scripture out loud to get out of the mindset of worry. I do not want to be consumed by worry, but I want to consider the lilies. They don't worry what's going on. Or what's going to happen tomorrow. They are completely reliant upon God's plan and provision. I love seeing the nature on my runs for this very reason. They remind me of what God's plans look like when I don't try to put my hands in the middle of it. Pure beauty.
A great illustration.
That's why God gave us that example, right? And you know, the question is, I'm really guilty of saying, of boiling this down and making it too simple. I know a lot of things are simple, but this is a little bit different. The question is worry a sin? And the initial thought is, yeah, worry is a sin. I mean, the Bible tells us that worry is a sin. It's a little more nuanced than that. When I was thinking about it this time, I was thinking the answer depends on how we handle it, right? So if Kimberly is thinking, what am I going to do with my husband who is completely relying upon me right now, whatever the situation is, that's a worry. That's a real worry. Now, I don't think God thinks that's bad that she has that worry, right? But what does she do with that worry? That's the real question, right? And so you gotta do the right thing with it. It's not what you think, it's what you do with that worry.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, Second Corinthians tells us to take every thought captive.
Ideas that we're going to have things that produce fear in us. I mean, but the Bible says, it doesn't say you shouldn't have things that make you fear. The Bible says, fear not. You know, the quote she was referring to is faith and fear cannot coexist. Faith and fear are both actions that we take as a result of things that produce fear. So you can either have faith that God is going to take care of that thing, or you can have fear that will paralyze you. And that's where you start to step into sin. Things that produce fear in us, those are going to come. It's what our reaction to those things are.
Yeah. And that's, and fear's another good example. And worry is just one of those things that it depends on what you do with it when you get the impulse to do. Do you go straight to God? If that's what you do, you say, okay, God, this is worrying me. What do I need to do with it? Well, He'll give you an answer to that.
Sure.
But it becomes sin, I think, when we refuse to give it to God. That's where I think we fall short.
Right.
Another question. Are you allowing God to prepare you for every good work and trusting Him in those preparations? Are you honoring God with the vessel He has sanctified you to be? And she says, every time I feel frustrated with the difficulties of our new life, I remind myself that I am God's vessel to do His work, not my own. I am thankful for grace and forgiveness as I reflect on the purpose of this vessel. When I feel overwhelmed with responsibilities, that is when I take the opportunity to go out for a run, whether in training or not, so that I can reconnect with God and get my realignment.
Yeah, I mean, this kind of goes to, you know, a lot of people say I don't have time for a run, you know, basically saying I can't afford the time to go run. Well, many times you can't afford not to go and run, because to not go on that run or that walk is saying that I don't need to get out and clear my head. And we all need that. We all have the busyness of life coming at us like a freight train every day when we wake up. And you've got to be intentional. Who was it that made the comment, I have so much going on today that I need to wake up an extra 3 hours early to pray about it? Well, that prayer can be done. Prayer is clearing your head, right? So you can get out and walk or run and pray just the same. But when we say we don't have time to do that, we don't have time to pray, we don't have time to get out and clear our head on a run or a walk, that is a choice. Having time is only choosing what you're doing. And we can all make the choice to do those things or not do those things. And it really comes down to a choice.
Well, and I made the comment before that, you know, sometimes we get in the middle of something that we are worried about, and we work and we work and we work and we make no progress because we can't think clearly. And so we think that running or doing something like that, whatever it takes to clear your head, we think that that's going to take more time, when in truth, what it's going to do is it's going to get you to a solution faster, not slower, because once you get a clear head, you'll get to that solution faster. So it's not really taking you, it's not really taking time out of your day like you would think, right? In that case. So, and you may be out there, if you're out there and, you know, running or walking is not your thing. I get that. You know, that's not the thing for everybody, but you should have something. You know, some people have a prayer closet, you know, and that's their place to go to clear their head. And that's great. But you've talked before about the big tree on the church property there. You know, everybody needs a place to go and clear their head. Whatever that is. For me, definitely, you know, for me, it's definitely running. And I know it is for you too, but, whatever it takes, we got to be able to clear our head.
Sure.
Another question. Are you taking care of the temple that God has loaned you? Are your choices based on what makes you feel good or what God has called you to do? This was a game changer when I started making healthy choices in my life, from food and nutrition to movement and exercise. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm pretty sure God is okay with me having a cupcake on my birthday, but I pray over everything I consume. I pray for blessings over it, but I also pray for wisdom to know if it's healthy for me. With over 45 years and multiple generations of unhealthy food choices, I don't always know what is best for my body. I pray over the food I prepare for and feed my husband, as his health is necessary for God's purpose. And it is my responsibility to take care of my husband in his condition at this time. I just love that. You know, just the whole idea of thinking about it from this standpoint and this whole reframe, what gets us closer to God? You know, we talk about people being transformed when they accept Christ. This is a transformation too. Coming to this realization is a transformation. And it can be sudden. Again, in Kimberly's case here, that seems to be the way that it was. It was all of a sudden her brain just reoriented itself and started thinking in a different, way. And like she says, 45 years of doing it one way and suddenly God changed her to another way. That's just incredible, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
So it doesn't matter whether you're, if you're a Christian and you already, but whatever that thing is that gets you, that thing that you feel like you need to change, there may be a solution that out there for you, and you may just need to find, Kimberly found a quiet place to figure out that she needed to go something, and that was the game changer. We probably all have something that we can do like that.
You know, one thing she just said that really made me think, you know, we talked about sending the pictures of your food to somebody, but what if we truly prayed over our food? I know many of us say, you know, we pray before we eat, but what if we really prayed about, God, is this what you want me to eat? You know, I think all of us have just like we have a moral compass, we have a compass inside us, which is the Holy Spirit, that tells us right from wrong. And many times what we're about to eat is just wrong. You know, this is a subject that we don't like to talk about. You've kind of mentioned this before, that everybody likes to talk about all the big hot button topics, but nobody likes to talk about gluttony. But, you know, what if we did really pray about what we're about to eat? Would that change what we eat, how much we eat, how often we eat? Would that change that? I think it probably would.
Yeah. That's good food for thought.
Unintended, right?
Do you need something to keep you motivated and to keep fit both physically and spiritually? Upward Sports Run for God Run Club has just what you need to keep you on track for both. Check out runforgod.com and join us today for pennies a day. You won't regret it.
All right, we're back. And, you know, at the start of the summer every year, something else always comes up at the start of the summer, and that's Father's Day. Don't forget Dad this year. You know, my dad, obviously, as we talked about, he's been in the hospital. He just turned 80. I couldn't even talk to him on his birthday. Because he couldn't talk and communicate on the day that he turned 80. But he's doing better every day. But it makes me less likely to take him for granted in the future. Dads are so important. Now don't get me wrong. There are some single mothers out there that do a great job, and it's a hard job. But fathers are really important. The Black Bees, the Experiencing God folks, when they were in Dalton, they have a father son that run together, don't they?
Yeah, they do. It's not Henry, but it's the son and the grandson. I can't think of their names now, but yeah, they're both runners.
Yeah. And it was cool to see them out there and running together. We went running with them that day, and it was pretty cool. And I remember running with my son when he was young, and I really enjoyed that. And as he got older, at one point in time, he tried to go back to running a little bit. And man, I really cherished those days. But he, you know, once he's got kids now, and he's having a harder time getting out there and doing those things. But you also ran with your kids when you were young too, right?
I did. Yeah. They just, somehow it feels like, they just started running away from me at some point in time. And I really don't understand how that happens, Dean.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I told my kids they'd never be faster than me. So, at some point in time, that has to become not true, right?
Well, no,
at some point in time, I have to get slower.
Well, it depends on how you do it, Dean. You know, I was just telling the story this past weekend that Lane has never beat me on the swim. And Lane hates it when I tell this story because he's such a fast and accomplished swimmer, but Lane has never beaten me in the pool. And that's because the last time we raced, we were doing the best of three. And I got him on the first one and we were racing on, but on the first one, I noticed that he was really close to me. And when we got to the wall in that first set, I said, "We're done." He said, "What do you mean we're done? We got two more to go." And I said, "Well, first of all, that's assuming you beat me on the next one that we have a third one to go, but we're done." He said, "Why are we done?" I said, "Cause I can honestly say as of this moment, you have never beaten me and I will never race you again now." But Dean, the bad part about that is, that was, I think he was 12 years old at that time. So that's been like almost 10 years ago was the last time I raced him. But I can honestly say to this day, Lane has never beaten me in the pool. So there is one way to skin that cat that you can say you're always faster than your kid.
Well, that's good stuff.
Unfortunately, and, you know, I didn't do that on the run, though.
Well, these times that we have our kids are really important. It's really important for, especially for fathers and sons and fathers and daughters for that matter, to have these moments. And, you know, for those who are out there, you know, the father is supposed to be the spiritual leader of their house too. And, I know you do a good job with that with your household. And it's really important. And, you know, fathers have a special role to play. And today we all want to be friends. Fathers can't always do that. You know, fathers have to be the one a lot of times to say no, to almost be a little bit of a jerk sometimes.
Yeah.
Say, this is the way it's going to be. But that's part of being a father. And so
yeah,
it's a really important
job. I'm your father first and your friend second.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to put it. By the way, I think everybody should go for a run on Father's Day. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
All right, it's a time for Dean's thoughts. That's a time when I share something that I've written about the intersection between running and faith. Well, you've heard the phrase, necessity is the mother of invention. Well, here's a story about that. It's called The Fosbury Flop. If you watch a high jump competition today, you will notice that they all use a very similar technique. They approach the bar moving perpendicular or at an angle to it and then make a sharp turn and jump with their back to the bar. As they're clearing the bar, they arch their backs and a final kick of the feet ensures their clearance. If you're any kind of track fan, you know I am describing the Fosbury Flop. Dick Fosbury was the ultimate innovator, but most people don't realize that his famous Fosbury Flop was invented out of frustration more than the intention to push boundaries. Back in the early 60s when he was young, he had found that the scissor technique was ineffective for him, and he was frustrated on his lack of progress using the straddle, which was the predominant method of the day. The straddle was a technique where a jumper threw his body over the bar down, first with one leg, and as he rolled over, the other leg cleared the bar. So out of frustration, Fosbury decided to try something new, and the Fosbury Flop was invented on the spot. The first day he used the new technique, he improved his jumping by 6 inches. He perfected that technique while in college, and eventually he won the Olympics. Within 10 years, nearly everyone was using his flop to high jump. Today, every competitor at the highest level uses the Fosbury flop. So what does that have to do with running? Well, I'm glad you asked. Very often, we get frustrated in our fitness journeys, don't we? I cannot count the number of times someone has come to me and said, I'm exercising more than ever, and I'm eating better, but I just can't seem to lose weight. Or I've increased my mileage, and I still can't seem to get any faster. I hear frustration in those questions regularly. For that matter, I get frustrated from time to time. It doesn't seem to be working for me. We've probably all been to when you get there. Dick Fosbury made a new way. You may not need to new to get to your goals, but a few changes could be in order. Did a 100-mile run. After the first 20 miles, it was clear that my nutrition plan was not working. I had worked on it for months leading up to race day. I had read all the literature. In my mind, it was clear that I needed to ingest 50 to 80 grams of carbohydrates an hour to keep myself topped off. But when I tried to eat the food that would maintain that level, it wreaked havoc on my stomach. I had to stop eating anything but gels and bananas. Nothing I read suggested that the combination of those two things would be enough. But changing my strategy on the fly worked. I had other issues, but my stomach was not one of them. I finished 66 miles, and my weight remained the same as when I started. My intake was good, but it was not what everybody else was doing. What are you doing that is not working? Is there something you can try that would help? Maybe even something outside the ordinary. Don't give up. Instead, find another way. I spent some time in the porta potties during that first 20 miles. Then I spent another 10 miles feeling nauseated. I could have said, well, I got it wrong and packed it in, but I didn't. And you don't have to quit either when things go a little off the rails. All of it makes me think about how God kept telling Moses to go tell Pharaoh to let his people go worship God. And if it had been me, would I have given up after the first three times it didn't work? I really don't know. It had to be really frustrating to Moses. Can you imagine what it felt like to go meet with a man who could kill you at any moment over and over? Does God just want you to try a different way? Does he just want to see your faith in action? I think that's what it's all about. If you're having a tough time and you can't figure out why it's working, try something different. Just assume that you're trying the best way just because everybody else is doing it that way. Dick Fosbury tried something nobody else was doing, and we're still talking about it today. Does God want you to go in a different direction? Maybe one that's a little scary. Seems like that worked out for Moses. Maybe it'll work out for you too.
It's a great story, Dean. We were just talking about that Fosbury flop, I think last week, and how that, you know, how he took something that seemed so countercultural and started doing it, and now it's the norm. And you're right. We get so cued in to what others are thinking, what others are saying is right, that many times it's not right. And we do need to chart our own course.
Yeah.
And who knows who could be the next Fosbury out there?
Yeah, it's true. It's true. You know, one thing I found in reading about Dick Fosbury, I did not know this. Did you know there was a girl named Debbie Brill who also was doing the same kind of jump at the same time? I had never heard this before, but they called it the Brill Bend, what she did. And it was very similar to the Fosbury flop. And apparently they both started doing it in separate places at about the same time.
Really?
So, I thought that was really interesting that now Fosbury was the one that he was more successful and did it for a longer period of time and did it at the highest levels. And so that's why his stuck. But I thought that was pretty cool. But I'm not big on just going with the prevailing wind. I never have been. I like the idea of, one of the things that I've never stopped doing, static stretching. You know, there for a while, all the literature was saying, don't do static stretching. But what I knew was that it helped me. And so I didn't care what the literature said. I knew it helped me. And so even if the literature said you're doing yourself a disservice, I knew it made me feel better. And so I was going to keep doing it. And I think that's the way we have to go about things sometimes. We have to try different things. And if you find something that works for you, keep doing it that way. Right.
Well, and so many times the simplest answer is the best answer. You know, we just talked about, you know, the triathlon coach that I talked about. You know, everything you read says, pretty much says you've got to make nutrition complicated. I mean, you've got to count this. You've got to weigh that. And this is a guy, it's Bob Sebohor. I mean, he's a very accomplished triathlon coach. And his method, I'm pretty sure to this day, is to simply have people take pictures of their food and send it to him. And yeah. Society says that could never work, but he's making it work. He knows that it works, and he's not listening to what all the TikTok videos and everybody is saying you should be doing. He's doing what he knows that it works. And so many times God puts those kind of answers right in front of us. You know, do this, read your Bible. Talk to me and pray every day. That's pretty simple. But even in our spiritual life, we try to complicate this process into a way that's not sustainable. And at the end of the day, so many things from diet to money things, you know, whatever we do in our life, we try to complicate it and make a better way, but it's just not sustainable.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. There's the other side of this too, right? There's the other side where we see an ad, right? You run your best marathon on 12 miles a week or, you know, whatever the ad is, right? And you're just not going to do that. I say that you always have the Parker Valbies, right? You have that, sure. That athlete who does more with less. And so everybody looks at that and thinks, well, if she can do it, I can do it. Well, that's not necessarily true either. So not only do you want to, sometimes you want to be the different person like Parker Valby, but then sometimes you need to do it the way most people are doing it because that really, there's a reason why most people are doing it that way, right? It kind of goes both ways. Marketing is ruining the world. telling us that things will work that, you know, a lot of times are not going to work.
Right.
You almost can't believe anything you hear anymore. Have you ever bought any one of those as seen on TV things and got it and then found out it doesn't work like it showed on TV?
I've done it one time. I think I've talked about it on this podcast. One time I bought something from an as seen on TV ad, and for whatever reason, I couldn't sleep. This has probably been 25 years ago. Couldn't sleep. I was flipped on the TV, and it was the Flavor Wave oven. You know, you could cook chicken in like 1 minute. And I bought that thing, and it was expensive. I bought that thing, and it came in. I think I used it one time, and I was like, this is nothing but a piece of junk. And I moved it for the first few times we moved. I took it with me because I wanted it as a reminder of don't fall for the stupid marketing tactics that many of these I've seen on TVs. Don't fall for it ever again. And I haven't. So, well, I take that back.
Good
you
stuff.
And I both fell for this one. You remember when we were at the Hot Chocolate Expo and we paid like $200 for something that was nothing more than a car buffer because it was the new massage therapy thing. I don't even remember what it was called.
The buffer. It was called the buffer.
Yeah, it was a car buffer that you can buy for $49 at AutoZone.
Yeah. I still have mine. Yeah. It still works pretty well, but like you said, didn't have to spend that much money on it. You're right. Well, you know, I wrote in here about Moses. Have you ever thought about what it would have been like to be Moses and go to Pharaoh? The idea that you're going to go to this guy again, Pharaoh could have just struck him dead at any minute. Anytime he wanted to. And he's just going to keep going to him and telling Pharaoh something, asking Pharaoh a question, and he knows what the answer is. It's just, I mean, Moses. Woo. So the next time you think about doing something scary, be glad you're not Moses going to Pharaoh.
Yeah.
Have you always wanted to read through the entire Bible but never found the time to do it? Well, let me do it for you. Sign up for the self-paced Bible in a Year Challenge and start listening today. Every day, I read a few chapters of the Bible and give you running or walking tips and encouraging quotes. You must be a Run Club member for access to this exciting challenge. So, if you're not a member, sign up today and get started. If you are a member, what are you waiting for?
Every week I share a reason why running and or walking is so awesome, and this is this week. Running is good for you if you have diabetes. Diabetes is a pretty ubiquitous disease these days, and it affects a ton of people. But this is what diabetes.co.uk says. It says, running can be an ideal form of exercise for people with diabetes as it helps improve the body's sensitivity to insulin. This can be especially useful for people with type 2 diabetes to help combat insulin resistance. Now, there are some precautions that you should take. You know, if you're going to be a runner and you're going to be and you have diabetes, if it's a fairly severe case, you need to have sugar with you at all times and do all those things. You know, they recommend either glucose tablets or some kind of sugary drink or something. And then the other thing too that I learned is that people with diabetes have to be especially careful about dehydration, because if your sugar level is high, I did not realize that you can get dehydrated faster with a higher sugar. So that's an interesting thing that I learned. But running or walking are really good for you if you have diabetes. Obviously, reducing weight always, you know, usually helps with diabetes, depending on the kind of diabetes that you have. I mean, pregnant people sometimes get diabetes while they're pregnant, and then it goes away after they deliver the baby, because that extra fluid retention causes problems. So anyway, listen, I know we get some messages every once in a while from people saying, well, it's not exactly what you said. I realize I'm not talking, we're not talking about medical stuff. We're just saying that running is good for people with diabetes. And so, you gotta look, if you have diabetes, you gotta look into it yourself and find out what you can and can't do.
Sure.
Well, we had the, I think we had the Olympic final preview last week. The Bowerman mile was just incredible. They had everybody in that mile that is likely to be in the finals of the Olympics. Everybody was in there with the exception of one guy, Narve Nordahl from Norway. Say that three times fast. Narve Nordahl from Norway. He was about the only one that wasn't there that has any chance of being anywhere near the top in the Olympics. And they were all together at the same time. And, maybe the best field ever assembled. I remember watching the Bowerman mile back when I was in high school in the '80s. It's been around that long. And I remember those days having these great fields. Well, this one was as good as any. And let me tell you what I did. So this is what before the race, I wrote down the places of everybody and then their times, my predictions for them, their places and times. And I got the first three correct. And not only did I get them right, but I missed them. I missed the winner by 0.11 seconds. I missed the second place guy by 0.01. And I missed the third place guy by 0.22. That's pretty impressive, huh?
That's almost hard to believe. That feels like prophecy there. That's, I get the 1, 2, and 3, but the times being that close, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Josh Kerr won. He's a Scottish guy, part of the Great Britain team. He's the guy that beat Ingebrigtsen in the last world championships. And he beat Ingebrigtsen again, but now this was Ingebrigtsen's first run back. So it's going to be interesting to see how it goes between now and the Olympics. And then Jared Naguse from the USA, he was third. So it was good to see a guy from the USA do so well. So this is the interesting thing about the mile right now. Well, the 1500 meters in the Olympics, it's the 1500, not the mile. But when it comes to middle distance, usually the hardest team to make is the Kenyan team, right? But right now, the American team and the British team are harder teams to make than the Kenyan team. Can you believe that? I thought that was interesting. And, you know, and then the Australians are really good too. The Norwegians have two really, really good guys, but it drops off after that. So making the team, you know, not as hard as the Kenyan team, but they're really good too. It's going to be a really great battle.
In that race, what were the top three times?
3:45 and 3:46.
Wow.
Yeah, it was fast. Of course it was, you know, it was rabbited. So. Yeah. You thought it would be fast, but yeah, it was fun to watch. And interestingly, Josh Kerr won it, but he didn't win it like he normally does. Normally Josh Kerr wins a race by out kicking everybody in the last 100 meters. He took the lead with 600 to go. You know, that's normally an Ingebrigtsen thing to do, but yeah. He actually pushed Ingebrigtsen at that point. So it's pretty good. It's going to be interesting. You know, Ingebrigtsen has a score to settle with Josh Kerr and Jake Whiteman, who beat him in the Olympics, the last Olympics in the 1500 meters. So it's going to be interesting to see whether he can get revenge on them or not. But we'll see. Yeah, you know, I wish Nagus too, the American guy, I wish he would close that gap. He's always right behind him. I wish he would close it. There was also a Sydney McLaughlin Lavroni sighting too. She did. She ran the 200 meters. She blew everybody away in the 200 meters. She's going to defend her 400 meter hurdle title. Now, if everybody remembers, if you listen to this podcast, you may remember us talking about her. She's the one she's a devout Christian, and she posts a lot of things about her faith. So, you know, we tend to root for Sydney. And it looks like she's in pretty good shape. So, to defend her title. And there was some talk about her running the flat 400, but it looks like she's not going to do that. She's just going to do the 400 meter hurdles in the Olympics. But I'd love to see her try to double and try to do both of those. That would be great. Anyway, check out Sydney. Keep following Sydney for this summer. How about a trivia question for this week? This one might be the toughest question we've ever posed, but just because of the way that it's worded, but I thought this would be cool. There's a very common answer to this. Now, the answer to this is not complicated, but tell me what this is the definition for, okay? A complex multifactorial concept that represents the sum of metabolic, cardiorespiratory, biomechanical, and neuromuscular efficiency during running. What is that called? There is a name
kind of
for that.
Jeopardy style.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you know the answer to that, you can send it to dean@runforgod.com. And if you're the first Run Club member to answer that and to send that in, then you will win $20 off in the Run for God store. And I'm going to be impressed with the first person who answers that one. So, again, it's a common answer. But I don't think it's that easy. So, do you know the answer?
I don't think I do.
Yeah. All right. Our motivational thought of the week comes from John Wooden, the best coaches of all time. He said, "Things work out best for those who make the best of how things work out." Love John Wooden. What a great man he was. He was a UCLA basketball coach, if you don't know, maybe the best ever. He won 10 championships in a 12-year period. That's incredible, right? When you think about the March Madness, think about a team winning 10 out of 12 years. That's what he did. So, of course, he had some pretty good players back in the Bill Walton, Lou Alcindor days. So, make the best of what you have is what he's saying.
Sure.
All right. Until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Good job, Dean.
For more information about the Run for God ministry, go to runforgod.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There's nothing more important. thanks for joining us today.